Welcome to another episode of Chad and Steve Have a Podcast. In this episode, we talk about roller coasters, our first YouTube videos, why Star Trek is the greatest television show ever, and if you can really make money on YouTube. If you haven't done so already, why not subscribe to our podcast so you can get alerted each time we upload a new episode? Without further ado, let's get into it.
Hey, Chad, thanks for that introduction.
Not bad, huh?
Do you see what I did there? I said, thanks for the introduction. Because we haven't recorded the introduction yet.
It's your turn. It's a seamless start to the podcast already.
I don't know what that introduction is going to be. We thought we'll take turns. We'll do after we record the podcast. Because we don't know what we're going to talk about. It's all just all a mystery. And then after the podcast, we'll record the introduction. Hey, in this episode, we're going to talk about, I don't know, Mars, maybe. We might.
I will include, we talked about recording the introduction in the introduction. So it'll kind of be like a meta.
Right. Oh, so you got to say something about Mars too.
Oh, and something about Mars for sure.
Yeah, see, we'll have fun with these introductions. Hey, welcome everybody to our podcast. Chad and Steve Have a Podcast. And it's like an official podcast now because I finally got it all figured out. Well, I wouldn't say I've got it all figured out, but I am better.
That's just like a general statement. You have everything figured out now.
I've got life figured out. I'm on top of the game right now. So I've got we're on Spotify. That's good. And that was really cool to see our podcast sitting there on Spotify. And, you know, we've had like four, they don't call them views, they call them downloads. And so we've had like 14 downloads, and that's without saying anything. I don't know how people find it. It's weird.
And we still have 2 subscribers on our YouTube channel.
And we still have you and me subscribed. I'll make an announcement this week, and then people will listen to this and they'll say, oh, wow, that's when Steve said he was going to make an announcement.
Hey, and this is what it is. This is the podcast they keep talking about. Hey, I'm really listening to them talk about the podcast on the podcast that they told me to talk.
It's getting so meta here. Talking about the podcast, about the podcast. Did you notice that I'm up higher today? I don't know if you noticed that or not, because I'm standing. But what I did is I raised my laptop up. I put a box up here. So it's like at high. So I'm not looking down, even though my camera is up higher. And for people who are listening on Spotify, this is all irrelevant, you know.
I'll picture it right now. The camera is just below Steve's nipples.
Yeah. Hey, is there anybody? This seems like a problem. Oh, no. It's the garbage truck. It's Friday afternoon. The garbage truck. It's going to be loud.
Garbage truck Fridays.
Is there anybody, any company that is working on solving the problem, or maybe somebody has solved the problem of when you're on a Zoom call or any kind of conference, or you know, like what we're doing now, where you could actually look at a person in the eyes while you're talking to them, you know, like a camera in the monitor or something,
or make it so therefore you could.
Because I have to look at the camera, but then I can't see you. And so I have to look back down at you to see your eyes, you know.
And I find sometimes I stare at myself, and that really starts to freak me out. I hate sometimes staring at myself when I'm talking, because then, or on a Zoom call or whatnot, and you're kind of missing a point or something like that, because you're too busy making sure that the lighting's right or your hair looks good.
Your hair looks fabulous today.
Thank you. I actually just got a cut. That's part of the reason. And I also brought in an extra light. So therefore, anybody who watched it would be able to actually see how good my hair looks.
Our podcast is all going to be all about hair. We're just going to introduce each episode. We'll start with hair talk.
I have a YouTube subject we can talk about.
I would love to talk about something about YouTube.
I was reading an article just before this call, and it was I think it was in Fortune magazine or something like that, and it was called Why You Shouldn't Start a YouTube, or Why You Will Never Become Successful as a YouTuber, or something like that.
Wow, that's a downer topic title.
It is. And I realized that we've kind of talked about this in past podcasts and whatnot, but I found it fascinating that it all kind of boiled down ultimately to showing how a smaller percentage you have of earning enough money to make a living off of YouTube as to be the reason why you shouldn't pursue YouTube. And it just fell back to what we were talking about previously, where where it's like, what's kind of the point of getting into this and doing this and starting this in the first place? And it seems to be measured now. And that's why I ended up going down a bit of a rabbit hole and reading some other articles. And the other articles, if they weren't talking about the sustainability of money, they talked about the sustainability of being able to grow an audience. And I get that that's really important, but I remember starting and making videos on this platform, and I've related to a lot of people who I've met along the way who have become successful on this platform, where they started it without really the thought. Like, there was such an aw shuckness to getting your first 100 subscribers that I think now it's so transactional. And they, in the article that I was reading, they released some statistics which showed, I think you have a 4% chance of opening up a YouTube channel and that YouTube channel getting more than 1,000 subscribers. And I'm sure the percentage is minuscule for, you know, getting up to a million subscribers or whatnot. And I realized I checked on Social Blade the other day, and at 1.6 or however many million subscribers we have, we're like ranked 11,000th in the entire world. So I'm not too sure using the metrics of like just getting subscribers or just making money off of it is something to tell your kids whether or not you should start a YouTube channel. Because I think it takes away the main reason why I started doing this, which was just an opportunity to, you know, make some videos and put them out there for people to see.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a, I don't know, in some ways that's kind of, God damn it. There's a fly that is just, it will not leave me alone. I'm sorry.
That's going in the intro too.
If we're cutting it all out. yeah, I think it's gotta be a hard road to follow at this point in YouTube. You and I started, I think it was a lot easier. It was definitely easier to build an audience if you started 10 years ago than it is now. There was a lot less competition. But it is, I think that there's also an unrealistic expectation a lot of people have when they come into YouTube, because they see so many channels, and you could, like you said, 11,000, or I mean, I don't, we're in that same kind of area of, you know, 10,000-11,000 subscription rates, and people look at that and think, well, that's a lot of people, I can get in on that too. But it's really not, when you put it into perspective of how many people are using YouTube. And a lot of those are just channels that have been around a while. And a lot of those channels are professional channels, like we talked about last week, where they're just, you know, TV shows who are just putting their content on there. I don't know if I would ever at this point recommend somebody starting a YouTube as a viable business proposition. I think that if you wanted to really have a go at it, I mean, really want to just quit your day job and just, I'm going to just be a YouTuber, I think the best way to do it would be like hire a bunch of people and make a full-blown production out of it, and have real smart people who know how to not really game the system, but really how to work that YouTube algorithm, which is like, you know, everybody bows down to the YouTube algorithm sort of, you just have to kind of do that. And I think we've just kind of got to the point where most of that stuff kind of comes natural to us at this point. A lot of it is common sense, but still, just to jumpstart it at this point would be really difficult. Wow.
It is, because I'm doing all the best practices with a second channel, and it's been a huge struggle to get to 10,000 subscribers using a channel with over a million subscribers to kind of like get a great, you know, jump start to it. But once you kind of fall into the, it needs to rely upon your uploads and just you going out there and attracting a new audience, it really is tougher than ever. However, part of the larger point is I also notice that most people kind of misunderstand what kind of making money on YouTube actually means, right? Like, thinking that, because if I had a dollar for every expose YouTube kind of documentary style like video where someone goes on the internet to pull someone's net worth and use that as a factual piece of information to make a statement about Brad Pitt being worth $150 million because they read it on the internet is part one of, part two is thinking that because you have a million subscribers and a bunch of views, that the money that you actually make through ad revenue or even through sponsorships is enough. Even if you have that volume, that there's still enough coming in. We both have built jobs and careers and whatnot through so many things which have come through YouTube, but not directly because of ad revenue from YouTube, people watching our videos or whatnot, or even just from sponsored deals where you get paid to do a video. This is rolled out into programs and da da da. And the larger point of the career is built off of YouTube, but it's not because YouTube is literally paying a creator enough money.
Right.
I quit my job. I didn't quit my job when we had a whole bunch of subscribers and we're getting a whole bunch of views because, well, at the time it wasn't paying as well as it does now. But ultimately, you know, our true money truly started coming in when we were thinking above and beyond that, when we got into product sales or starting doing courses or starting to do, you know, other things kind of leveraging off of your YouTube audience, but not directly like the money we make each month, you know, is enough just through ad revenue to sustain what we actually kind of put into the system.
No, it's an unrealistic expectation, but I do think that especially a lot of the younger YouTubers, they who are very successful, lead into it and they kind of like to flex that and show like, yeah, we're making some cash on YouTube. And I think a lot of young people see that and think, oh, I can do that too. I can just make a gaming video or whatever. And the fact of the matter is, if you're making a lot of money off of AdSense, and some of these YouTubers probably are, just because they produce so much content, they're also spending a lot of time. It's a lot of work, no matter what you make of it. But I also think it's important to know that the subscription number isn't the most important metric here. And I know even all of the channels who try to tell you how to grow your channel, they're singularly obsessed with subscriptions, you know, go from 0 to 1,000 subscribers. And there's people who can make a lot of money with YouTube as a component of their business model who have 50,000 subscribers. You don't have to, you got to think of YouTube as one tool of your kind of business arsenal. You got to start thinking like a business person, because that YouTube or the AdSense revenue is flaky, you know, at best, and it's not really that reliable. And you're going to have to, you're going to have to produce a lot of content for that to be. I mean, it's nice. It's nice to have that income, but it's certainly nowhere near the main source of income for anybody who's successful.
And there's so many more measures of success than just money. And it gets frustrating because earlier this year, or maybe it was last year, I think it was last year, actually, the kind of cleanfluencer trend kind of became popular for like a season during the summer or something like that. People were talking about Marie Kondo and Clean My Space and some other people in this space who, you know, are generating just through cleaning content, something that didn't exist before. So during that time, there was I think it was in the Guardian or the New York Times or something, they wrote an article about cleanfluencers, and that kind of spun off a bunch of sub articles. And you kind of see how like literally one large article from a large established place like the New York Times creates so much more news in itself for people, other publications that just read that and then cherry pick and then create. It turned from that just being like, hey, this is a very interesting thing. People are at home more, so da 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 da, and they're concerning themselves with cleaning more, and now this is a new trend, which is whatever. And in that, there was a small point, which was, and some people have make a living off of it and have made money. And then as the article spun out, it became less about, hey, this is kind of interesting. And it was more about the spectacle of like, look, these people make millions of dollars doing this crazy thing. And those started becoming the headlines. So when you kind of search for cleanfluencers, it's very interesting because like there's one article which talks about kind of that. And then there's all of these. And during that time, because it became popular, Melissa got reached out to like weekly to do a magazine thing or a newspaper thing. And it's really frustrating. And she's noticed increasingly over the past few years, people are much more interested in being like, well, how they can see your subscribers and whatnot, and they like the backstory. But the bigger thing is like, well, how much money have you made from this?
Right. Right.
They'll be like, I'm not overly comfortable. Like this is what we do for a living, and we do, you know, well. like, well, can you, six figures, seven figures, eight figures? And then that's the stuff that ends up in the title. And that's the stuff that, and that ends up eclipsing, like, what we want to talk about selfishly is the fact that, you know, hey, all these people are being helped through this new technology to share a very traditional thing. And isn't that cool? And people can now make a living off of that. But it just turned into like all of articles for like weeks afterwards, which were just interested in how much money you can make and that you can make a living off of it. And that's what kids want to do these days. Hashtag YouTube.
It's, yeah, exactly. It's so funny how the still most, even with, you know, what was it, 2 billion users of YouTube regularly, we talked about that, kind of mainstream media still doesn't understand YouTube. No. And most people don't. And they see these numbers and they think, oh, YouTube billionaires. And they think some of them think that you're actually getting paid by YouTube. And you can almost always tell when they don't understand YouTube, when they ask, how many hits do you got? That's like the giveaway hits. I'm like, okay, you don't watch YouTube, do you? You don't know anything about this. But I always love it when you hear that. That's like the litmus.
That's an old school web term. People used to, how many hits does your website get? It's like, you have no idea what you're talking about, do you? You heard something. Do you know what a hit actually is versus a unique visitor?
I know. I'm like, no, well, I get this many views. But you know who you made a video on that was Gus Johnson. He actually had, there was a video recently he did of like when, something about when media interviews a YouTuber or something. Yes. He brought that up about the, so how many hits do you get on their viral video?
On your viral videos. Yeah. Melissa was on a Canadian morning show, and this was quite a few years ago, but it was at the time that we were doing this full time. And that was, there's a video somewhere, I think, on YouTube of it. And it's just this mildly awkward interview of this person just trying to get exactly that. Well, so how much money have you made during, and Melissa's doing her best to kind of like navigate the whatever and go on and talk about cleaning tips. But yeah, people are very much wrapped up in just, and I guess that's why all of this conversation came about, because it's like, I don't want my kid thinking like, I can't do that because I'm not going to make money or I'm not going to get subscribers. This was like, oh, what a cool outlet. I can be so creative and try some different things. And maybe along the way, some other people will kind of come along for the ride. And and now it's like, how can we build a team so therefore the lighting can be great and we have, all of our social people are more interested in setting up all the different social accounts before actually thinking about the content that they're making to constitute.
What do you think is the main thing that if you were going to advise a teen who wanted to start a channel, who thinks they're going to become, you know, the next YouTube star, how would you advise them? You know, what would you say is like, okay, you know, first of all, don't set your expectations so high, but what, if you wanted to give them some real honest advice of how to have a real go at it, what would you tell them?
That's a good question. I would say every successful YouTuber thought the same way that you did. And the only thing between them and you is hard work. It's not, I mean, luck helps, but chance favors a prepared mind. I think that's a saying, one of Melissa's like favorite sayings actually is chance favors the prepared mind. And it's not about, it's just being prepared. It's being prepared for success. So whatever is that gut feeling that makes you think that you can make it, that's your barometer. Everything else is just noise. Follow that and do it because you're not worried about getting a certain amount of subscribers or a certain amount of money.
Usually you the usual canned response you get from people is, well, just focus on making really good content. And but I don't think that's enough anymore. I mean,
you have to be incredibly unique. You have to do something completely different, and you have to be completely, and you have to push yourself more than ever because there is so much noise, even just mildly unique. And you also don't know what might come of it. So start it for the right reasons, and then you'll learn how to make money by marrying making money and doing the good business stuff that the audience wants, and learning that balance between like what you want to do versus kind of what pays the bills. And you never know when you might run across a random person in a jungle in Thailand who are making huge swimming pools.
Oh, that is amazing.
50 million views in a day. And a bunch of spin-off channels and da-da-da-da. Like, that shows that you don't know what it is. And if you, like, you could sit down and think that idea and execute it with all of the best whatever, that idea would never fly. The reason why that idea did fly, I'm assuming, originally was that there was some dude out there who was like, what a cool kind of concept for a video. And then, you know,
I kind of wonder if a lot of it has to be, there has to be a lot of just an accident kind of goes into it, because as much as you want to say, I want to start up a new channel and here's like channels that I really like, so I'll try to emulate them, but I still want to have my own spin on it. I don't know if you can actually do that. It has to almost be accidental. Like, I did this crazy video. We talked about a video a year ago or so. Remember the girl who did the Elton John song, the Tiny Dancer? And I don't know if she ever made any more videos, but that was a perfect example of something that's just a total fluke. And it just, it went over so well and so many people found it. And I think that the difference between a viral video like that and if you really want to have a go at it is knowing how to capitalize on that and knowing whether you want to have your, if you go into your YouTube channel wanting it to be a fun diversion, or if you really want to have a go at it and make money. And you have to kind of approach those differently. You have to start thinking like a business person, and you have to start thinking of YouTube as just one component of your business. And you have to start thinking, how else can I monetize this? And, you know, because you're going to be, your first year, if you once you start are qualified for AdSense, you know, you're going to be thrilled when you start getting those $8 paychecks every month or whatever it is. I mean, it's pretty small. I mean, you have just a very small audience. It doesn't,
like, when the stamp costs more than the check inside the envelope.
Yeah. But I think that I wish people would stop. I mean, I do it to a certain extent, but stop obsessing so much over subscription numbers.
That's it. Or even views.
Because it's really, you have to take a more holistic approach to it. And you just got to think about, how can I use this to my advantage, you know, and what
and that's the stuff, like, that's all the stuff I used to come across, and that really kind of stuck out was this unique, like, I mean, that was kind of the point of YouTube. It's like all these people trying different things and whatever, and then you find something that works, and then you learn how to replicate it without looking like you're replicating it. Or, right, you know, you grow it and you evolve it and you turn it into something else, maybe over a long period of time, but you constantly understand what people keep coming for, because you start with an idea of what you think your audience is, and then over the course of time your audience presents to you what it is, and you kind of start learning how you're dealing with understanding who's watching. But that puts you in a different position to where you started. And I think as soon as you're starting and you're like, oh, what am I going to do that's going to get the most views? And that, it, like, now you're already diminishing the thing which is actually going to be your unique, you know, identifier, if you will, or something which will hamper the progression of that, because you're literally just trying to do this because these are the types of videos that, you know, get views.
Right. And I think that's a common thing people do, is they think, well, a lot of this, I see this in woodworking videos all the time. There's new people come in and they see formats that work for people and the types of videos that they're making. And they think, well, I can just emulate that, but, you know, just maybe add my own spin on it. But your own spin probably isn't good enough. One thing you have to think kind of like, I hate saying it, but you gotta kind of think like a celebrity. You gotta think like you're the one reason why people want to watch it. Not what you're doing is going to kind of be secondary. It has to really, you have to have an engaging personality to the point that people want to tune in to watch you as much as what you're doing.
I use the example of Brad Pitt a lot. It's like, Brad Pitt's famous because he's an amazing actor. If you're famous just because you have a lot of subscribers, you're not famous. And that's actually one of the main reasons why YouTubers don't do well in traditional media. Lily Singh can have 15 million subscribers on this platform, but she's, you know, a third-rate evening late talk show host that kind of people are like really like riding on her because it just, it doesn't translate. Like her style of comedy and her approach is for her audience, which was also there quite a while ago. It's like she has like a younger audience. That's where she kind of grew. And now you're throwing her on late night TV and you're seeing her fly. Or how many YouTuber movies can you think? Shane Dawson's done them. Mm-hmm. Smosh has done them. I can't think of very many people who on the YouTube platform and then, you know, left it and waved bye-bye and then, you know, are off into Justin Bieber. So like, I get like there's whatever, but Justin Bieber's a talented singer songwriter. He wasn't just like, hey guys, he was a singer using YouTube as the outlet. So that didn't info, like he didn't start it being like, I hope people, and that's the difference. Now the thought is like, how do I start it so I can get that? As opposed to like, I have a talent to kind of put on display. That's the slow grind of Gus Johnson, who we keep bringing up, like just staying true to like clearly what he wants to do. And that's why I think he's inspiring, at least to me, but I'm sure to both of us, is like he just stuck it through short form, even in the days of 10 minute videos and 3 minute, you know, three ads and needing to do all of that and long outros or like all of that and tinkering with the videos, and him just being like, no, it's literally about the comedy and the writing and the way that I'm putting this out there. And if it gets received, great. If it doesn't, then that's okay too. And that took a lot of growth. That took a lot of me putting stuff on our channel being like, and it just not working for one reason or another and being discouraged about it or trying things that I thought were going to do amazing and then they don't. And then you're like, maybe I should stop worrying about how things are going to do.
Right. Let me take you back 12 years. Your first, you and I started our channels, Clean My Space, Woodworking from Your Mortal, started in 2008. And it's just, I think it's just a few months apart from each other. It's kind of weird how that happened. But do you remember shooting and posting your very first video?
Wow. Well, it wasn't me. It was Melissa. That was back when Melissa actually shot them. She was a point and shoot camera on a little crappy Best Buy.
Were you two together then?
We were.
You were together, yeah.
We were. We knew nothing. I knew nothing about video editing or any of this. I knew about the platform because I was in the web space. So like it was very kind of interesting and I enjoyed it from like a consumption standpoint. But and then we registered the channel just because we had a cleaning company and we're like, maybe we'll do something on YouTube. And
so like the cleaning business.
It was. Originally, the whole thought was to put some videos up, understanding that it was a global audience, but hoping that perhaps a few people would see from the Toronto area and be like, oh, hey, these people also have a cleaning company. And maybe I'll use the cleaning company, but we put the videos up and they were kind of the only videos on the platform. So people kind of instantly took to them. The first, I think, six videos on the channel were shot, edited, and put up there by one Melissa Maker.
And those videos are still on your channel. You never...
Videos are still on the channel. It's fun to actually go back to the first video because you see people who intentionally do search your first videos like, this is where it all started.
I love it. I love doing it. That's one of my favorite things to do on older channels is just always go and do that search order. Find the first one. Yeah.
Oh, and so, and it's coming up on 10 years of that first upload. And we've had the channel for a little bit longer. And I was hoping to put together like a 10 year retrospective video or something like that.
Oh, I see. Your channel started in 2008, but you didn't start posting videos until 2010.
2010. Yeah.
Gotcha.
2010. And
did you post any other types of videos before then, or had the account?
It was purely just for that point. And then right out of the gate, we made a video about salt stains on your boots, and it just instantly started getting traction. And you can see about five or six videos in, I think it is, you'll see our 1,000 subscriber special. And Melissa's just like, oh, we had no idea. And then we used to do a subscriber contest every 1,000, and they started happening pretty quickly. So we ended up getting we were unique enough to get a bunch of traction out of the gate. What about yours?
I I had no idea what I was going to do. And it was so spur of the moment. I can remember it very well that I set up the channel and I didn't intend on making woodworking videos, but you know, I had this, it was a Sony CyberShot camera. It's really a still camera. It was just a point and shoot camera, a little bitty thing, you know, a little bit bigger than a credit card, thicker, you know, but it had video capability. I think like 480p video it shot. And so, yeah,
quality,
the man. So I took that out. It might've been interlaced. No, I think it was P, but then, so I was, had already been woodworking for a long time and had my shop set up and everything. And then I thought, you know, what'd be fun, cause I'd been watching some YouTube videos, is why don't I just, document a project. And I was going to be making a chessboard, and I thought this will be fun. I'll just start documenting what I'm doing. And mostly it was just so I could kind of remember all the steps I was doing. It was mostly for myself. I didn't think anybody would really watch it. And then I posted that. That was when there was the 10-minute time limit on videos. So I had to do it in 7. And I look back on it now and it's like, how did anybody sit through this? This was really boring. And so, yeah, I posted that. And then I remember the very first comments I started getting. And it was just kind of crazy. And I was like, wow, how are people finding this? And it was kind of like what you said, being the earliest in that cleaning space. I was basically one of the early, there were like 2 other guys who were doing woodworking videos, and we were all kind of coming at it from a different approach. And so it was just kind of, again, just happenstance, accident. I happened to be there at the right time. And I didn't even realize that's what people were wanting to see. And so at the same time, I was posting other types of videos. I had like family videos on there. I was posting, for a while, we were posting roller coaster videos. It was a big part of the channel. In fact, I probably had more roller coaster videos than woodworking videos, because we would, Wyatt and I were part of the American Coaster Enthusiast. And so we would go all over the place trying to ride every single coaster. We rode, I'm pretty sure, every coaster in California. But, and I would take that little Sony CyberShot, because I could conceal it in my pocket. I could take it on the coaster, and then I could shoot these point of view shots, and then I would post those on YouTube. But eventually, more and more people just started watching the woodworking videos. They didn't want to watch those, and I kind of figured it was confusing. And so I still have one roller coaster video that I left on my channel. It's kind of an Easter egg you can find on there.
That's awesome. As a quick aside, what is your favorite roller coaster?
Favorite roller coaster. Ooh, that's a tough one. I would say there's some of the old wood coasters, Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk. That's the one I have on my channel still. It's called the Giant Dipper. That's a really fun one. Old school, things like 100 years old, you know?
Oh, wow.
But some of the newer coasters are much better. Some of the steel coasters, these giga coasters, they're, you know, over 400 feet high, and they just like incredible forces on those things. And those are really fun.
Have you been to Florida? Have you done the
we did
Florida, done California?
The only thing we did in Florida were Disney World. And that was just a couple of years ago. We went down to Disney World, but I went, you know, I wish we had time to do some of the other stuff, the other parks there. And also there's some
studios actually, I think.
Yeah. And the other place, like the other coaster Mecca, there's 2 major coaster parks in America. And one of them is Magic Mountain down in Southern California. And we've been there a few times, and that's basically all they have is just coasters there. They must have.
It's incredible there. We did a day trip there during the week. It was super quiet, which was awesome. And we could go on as many coasters as possible. And my mind was blown by, I got dizzy and had to stop riding coasters.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I managed to get so many rides in.
That park had the world's first looping coaster, the Revolution, really? It was called, and it came out in 76, because I guess it was tied in with the bicentennial or something. But it was it's still there, and it sucks because it was before they realized a looping coaster needs to be kind of elliptical shaped, because if it's round, the forces on it are just too jarring on your body. Yeah. It's really hard. So but it's still there. And so what they do is Magic Mountain is in sort of direct competition with Cedar Point, which is in Ohio,
right?
Sandusky, Ohio. And so there's this constant competition of who has the most coasters, and it's either one will beat the other by one, and then the other one will add one, and the others take away one, and who has like the highest, most intense, most craziest coaster. I mean, Magic Mountain has X2, I think it's called now, where the cars themselves spin around, you know, forward and backwards while you're going through loops. It's just insane.
Do you still like roller coasters as much as you did as a young man?
I love them. I worked at a theme park when I was in high school. I worked two summers at Elitch Gardens in Denver, and it was
a
blast.
Did you operate the coaster?
I didn't, know. I worked games, and so it was fun because the first year there, I worked out in the guest services. We worked like the tickets at the opening, and then parking lot. We had to direct cars where to park and everything. We had this big tower, so we had binoculars. You could look down and see where the empty spots were. And I got to park William Shatner, which was really cool. He came because they had shows that they would do, and he was one of the performers on one of them. He came in there and asked where he could park, and I'm like, "Oh, right this way, Mr. Shatner." I don't think I said Mr. Shatner. I don't think I said anything like that. But I was like, "Awesome!" I was like, "I love William Shatner. He's awesome."
That's pretty cool. William Shatner would be up there on my list of pretty impressive. I'd be a little awestruck. I think I'd be starstruck with William Shatner.
Yeah, that's I started drinking beer working there underage, but at night it was more of a carny kind of place because this was before they had the big Six Flags parks or bought everything.
Right. So it was mostly those little ring toss games and like
there was a lot of that. Yeah, in the second year I worked there, I worked in the games and I worked around the park doing the different games, and it was so weird because I would give prizes away to really cute girls and stuff. You know, they were like, "Oh, it was close enough. Here's the prize."
Fair enough. It's only a 14-cent stuffed teddy bear anyway.
I don't think any park. I think their parks have much more regulation now, but they had a really good coaster it was kind of one of the best in the world. It was Mr. Twister at Elitch Gardens in Denver, and then they moved the park and built a new version of it, which is no good. But anyways, I had coaster videos on my channel.
That's very cool. We only have one park here in the greater Toronto area, simply because winter, it's only kind of a summery thing here. So, but we do actually have our fair share of really good coasters, that all being said. And I brought up Florida because my absolute favorite roller coaster of all time is the Incredible Hulk. And I'm pretty sure that's at, or I think it's just called The Hulk. And I don't know if you know it or not. Anyway, it's a big twisted, mangled mess of track, obviously, and has loops and corkscrews and all of the rest. But it starts and you're in a tunnel and it brings you up and then you stop. And then there's some dramatics and some voices and whatnot. And then I think it uses magnetic propulsion to shoot you up into the, it's one of the most dramatic starts to any roller coaster. And I remember going on it and it was always the track is covered. So you kind of only see it shooting out and you don't really understand the context of it, but my absolute favorite roller coaster.
That's awesome. Yeah. Hey, those were the early days of YouTube, though, posting all kinds. And it was weird because I can't imagine doing that now, starting up a channel and not having a direction for it. You know,
And I guess it kind of it's like that chip has sailed. Like you need to.
Yeah,
and further to your earlier point, you need. I mean, people are like, "I need an editor and I need someone to put the thing together." And you know, you start with equipment, which is way beyond the point and shoot camera that you know we kind of said 480p.
I feel like I'm kind of grandfathered in on kind of these one of the last remaining YouTubers who just does it all himself. You know, I shoot this stuff myself, nobody else around, then I edit it myself, and I enjoy doing it. You know, the only time I haven't edited was for my course videos because there was so much to those. There's no way I could have done all of that, and the editor was great, and she did a great job on those, probably better than I could, but. I think if you're starting a YouTube channel today, it's going to be hard to not have a team on board that can do all that stuff, you know?
Yeah. And let alone the amount of best practices just for launching and understanding tagging and titling and thumbnails. And I was on Mr. Beast's Twitter and he was calling out for thumbnail designers. Like, "I'm hiring thumbnail." He has a team of thumbnail designers. I mean, I get it. Yeah. 40 million subs or 50 million subs or whatever he's at. I understand, but crazy. He's got peeps just working on those banger thumbnails of his, which is a pretty crazy thought.
Yeah. I think I see it more than anything. I think when people are starting new channels, they're really emulating channels that already exist, and that's the kind of the disappointing thing. It's like, I don't think you're really going to get much traction if you're just doing what's already out there.
Yeah. And it stifle. I mean, can you think of some pretty, actually I'm thinking of conversations with my 2-year-old, which was literally brilliant. I don't know if they still do it, but for a brief period of time, all of their videos used to trend on YouTube. And it was literally just these wacky conversations that this guy would have with his 2-year-old.
I remember that.
You can't kind of do that on the platform anymore. And there's that whole space, but
yeah,
so what's going to happen with family vloggers? Like, you can't go anywhere anymore. Like, is everybody just doing family vlogging in their house now? Like, now that
probably.
You can't go to the store or do hauls or, I mean, I guess you could still do hauls, but.
I don't know. That's a weird, I don't, family vlogging is just the biggest puzzle to me. I mean, I know, I understand people like it, but I just don't get it. And I don't know. We've talked about family vloggers a lot because of Clamor. There's a lot of them.
Clamor really opens your eyes to. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's seeing them in their native habitat doing their thing, coming down the stairs 5 times because the kids didn't, deliver the line right or get excited enough, or one of the kids tripped.
It was weird.
It was kind of weird to see.
It's just like the Paris Hilton growing up with a camera constantly in your face, and that's just your reality. Strange thing.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's the reality that I would want for my kid. So that's why we took at the very beginning when Riley came around, we realized it was at the time that family content was still, not that it's not fine now, but like I know a bunch of stories have come out about.
Well, you can't monetize it. You can't have comments. You can't.
Yeah, it's exactly, just, and especially
basically,
if
you can just
as it should be, all as it should be. But at the time that Riley came about, it wasn't a huge thing, especially just on Instagram, just taking pictures and being like, hey, here's this is a wacky thing. And so we did it for a little while, and we made an agreement that when Riley came about, we were like, she's not going to be in videos, like clearly a couple videos just because, but not like just cramming in the kid just because you can cram in the kid and you end up getting kind of pity views and whatnot. We somewhat recanted on during the COVID lockdown, simply because at least on Instagram, because we felt it just kind of felt right. Not right. It felt nice to kind of share that kind of, that's the type of stuff we were consuming was family stuff. So it was whatever. Anyways, so we did it, but now we've reeled it back almost completely to unlike her face is never shown, because we are very, very cognizant of it. And we're very, very cognizant of her. Like, of course she agrees, but she's 2.5.
She can't really consent.
And a 6-year-old doesn't understand. An 11-year-old doesn't understand truly like what is actually happening. They might be enamored by the fact that they get to go to school and people are like, oh, we saw your videos. No, 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 no. It's like that sometimes annoys me just as an adult, having such a public life and people being like, oh, hey, I saw you went to the spa the other day and da, da, da. And it's like, and oversharing and all of the rest. But when it comes to your kids, putting your kids through that, that's, they don't have a say in this.
Well, there's a fine line too between wanting to be proud of your kids and showing off what they're doing, and then kind of pushing that boundary a little bit further and like, oh, people kind of like to watch these videos and we got the kids in them. Let's make sure they're in them a little bit more. And then that kind of leads to, well, now the kids have to kind of do something that's extra silly.
Yeah.
And it you can see where that kind of, it can tend to lead. I don't know enough about the channels. I haven't watched enough of them, but the ones I have seen kind of make me cringe a little bit.
We're certainly not passing any judgment on anybody,
but
seeing the insight that we did. And also I think it was a couple of years ago when it was getting to the point where like the thumbnails were being like emergency hospital visit because, Billy fell off his bike.
Stupid.
And the
Billy.
Thumbnails, like the kid in the hospital bed and the mom being like panic look and whatnot. And just, it's like, this isn't right. We shouldn't be, that's not clickbait, is
but
it?
You know what we got to,
VR?
We got to get somebody on who is a family vlogger, because I don't feel I it makes me uncomfortable to talk about things that I don't really understand, because I've fallen into that trap before where I just, on a face value, I have like this kind of negative opinion of something. Right. But once I learn more about it, then I don't feel that way. I know. And I think it's just one of those traits that I've tried to, you know, coach myself on over the years, is try to understand things before I pass judgment, even though I feel like I'm kind of passing judgment here, because I know that they're not all like what I've seen. And you always kind of, the extremes always seem to rise to the top. Doesn't that seem to be the case?
Absolutely. And I'm sure there's probably a way that you'd be able to, you know, have your family contribute to content in a way which, you know, works well. I think there was just a lot of line blurring, and no one really drew any kind of like lines in the sand as far as like what is appropriate versus kind of what isn't appropriate. And I think we needed some stories like Micah Stauffer and like these larger undesirable, like, you know, people like
Daddy O5,
children for not performing well on yeah, whatever.
That was,
and obviously way, way worse. And we don't need to even get into that. But even just the parents that would put any kind of unnecessary pressure, or having your kid come to you and be like, I just don't want to do this anymore. I don't like it. I don't like how our whole life is kind of like needing to be like looking a certain way. It's like, that's what I think about. I fully agree. So let's do a shout out to the two people listening.
It's you and me.
If you happen to be a family vlogger, and if you would like to come on the podcast, please let us know.
I'm pretty sure we know a couple, maybe.
Oh, and this is also a shout out to Shannon from Bounce Patrol.
Oh yeah, we're gonna get her on. That'd be good about kid content.
She absolutely needs to come and speak to us. I have so much I want to speak to her about, and Riley also wants to speak to
her. I'll bet.
Riley's a big fan of that Bounce Patrol, let me tell you.
Right. Yeah, I think it's going to be fun to start bringing on guests on this show. And I've given that a lot of thought. I'm actually kind of coming up with a short list of people who I want to invite. And, you know, I want to try to keep it as one thing I want to try to do is find out what the most common questions that they get asked are and not ask those questions. Because I know a lot of times the podcasts I'm on, they always ask me the exact same things. And so I'd rather try to, as best as we can, just keep it conversational.
I like that. I mean, exactly like it was at Clamor, which kind of like spurned this whole thing on, the ability to sit on a couch and just, you know, just have these open conversations ended up alerting us to like, wow, isn't it amazing how much comes out when we just kind of talk like this, as opposed to, you know, planning on like, yeah, tell us more about your channel, Rick. Yeah.
I know. Whenever I'm a guest on a podcast, people always ask me, oh, what's your favorite project? That's like the most common question I get asked. And I'm like, I don't know. They're okay. It depends. I think a lot of so many of that stuff, it's not really, that's not very much of an open-ended question. You know what I mean? It's just like,
I think
I made a box. I liked a box.
That's okay. Melissa gets, do you actually clean your house?
Yeah,
that's the big one. No, she doesn't. she does a whole bunch of other stuff to do, and I'm the one that does that. So there you go.
You're a catch.
Thank you. I like to think so, but that's also why I got to hang the plaque, because I clean it, so therefore I get to hang the plaque. And for people who are listening, they have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about the plaque and pointing to something and they can't see it. So I'm sorry. I'm pointing to a million subscriber plaque.
But you actually enjoy cleaning, don't you?
I love cleaning. It's like so one of the most oddly satisfying things. Vacuuming and seeing the carpet lines, or having I'm a big fan of being able to do something in short amount of time that you see such a drastic change for. So I love the challenge of a messy kitchen, because it's like, watch, within 20 minutes, it'll just be perfect, or whatever the amount of time. So I love that payoff of like, you do it, instant gratification, and like hard work is instantly paid off. It's like no needing to build on it more.
Right.
So
yeah, we have very kind of delineated lines between who cleans what, and it just kind of evolved that way. It wasn't anything we sat down and say, you clean this, I clean this. But one of the things I do is the vacuuming. We don't have a lot of vacuuming because we have hardwood floors, but I've got this shag carpet, or it's a rug. It's in the living room. And it was funny, because when you mentioned that about oddly satisfying with the lines, that's exactly the way I feel. And so what I do is I have to pull the vacuum because I can't push it because it wants to grab that carpet. So you pull it, and then it's like, you know how you see those lawns that are mowed and you see those nice yes. lines. And so now I do all this, like now I'm like, oh, last week I'm going to do it diagonal. So I've got like these diagonal lines running through it and it looks so nice. I'm like, no, nobody step on it. Don't walk on the carpet because it just, it'll flatten it all out and it won't look so special anymore. But that doesn't last long.
It doesn't. I get the same fulfillment out of mowing the lawn. I do the same thing. All of the, you know, angles and whatnot. I'm starting to do the diagonal lines, and I'm hoping to get good enough next year to do the Wrigley Field like cross hatch pattern that they do. Make it look like a baseball diamond.
Do you ever do a spiral? Just start from the outside and just work.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, that's the way I used to mow the lawn back when I was a kid. We had a square lawn. You know, we're not gonna have a lawn anymore.
Yeah, that's right. You're getting rid of what small amount of lawn you have left.
A little bit left. We're getting rid of it. Yeah, we're just going to go with total just California landscaping, which is just natural, you know, indigenous kind of stuff around here.
Right.
And it just makes sense. And I don't really have any need for a lawn. I think a lawn is great if you've got young kids. I think it's fun because I remember when I was a kid, it was really fun to just kind of play in the lawn and just roll around. And yeah, but don't really need that now. And it's just a pain to maintain it.
I can come over and kick a ball around.
Yeah, there you go.
You don't need to be a kid to love kicking a ball. One of the things I love about having grass is going out and kicking a ball around with my kid. I get it. I don't necessarily do it by myself, but how's that bathroom coming?
Oh, did you see the guy just walk past me?
I did. But he did a good job of like not making, like he clearly knew something was up.
I bet he wonders what's going on, huh? You would probably know that we were podcasting. He probably just thinks I'm talking like a telephone call or something.
That's
like
true.
A Zoom call or something. Yeah.
Well, you could ask him. He could become our third subscriber if you ask.
We should interview him. Should ask him what he thinks about. Well, yeah.
Come on in. Hi, how you doing?
But you know what's funny is the bathroom. It looks so big. Well, they demoed it over the last 2 days. Everything stripped it down to the bare studs. You know, and wow, it looks huge. without like cabinets and the shower and everything
so
in
just
there.
Don't like, fill it with all that stuff.
I know.
Little hole in the ground.
Just put a hole in the floor, man. That's all we need. That's why I keep joking with my wife. I'm like, okay, my goal is to just get off the electric grid. So we got the solar panels, you know, and I want to get the batteries so that we're like basically off the grid. And they're like, yeah, but we're still getting the water bill. I want to get off the water grid. I'm like, oh, damn it. I'm going to go out there and dig a hole until I get water.
Create a well.
Probably be seawater or something. I don't know.
How much longer do you expect before it's done? Halfway
well
through.
they're saying like 6 to 8 weeks. And most of that is just because it's so delayed. The permits take forever and the inspections, you know, every step of the way has to, and now with the COVID they're all backed up and it's just really time consuming.
Yeah, we're actually getting a few things peeled back. We're going back to a stage two. Our gyms are closing, indoor dining. Yeah, we've been having the second wave has been, at least as far as new cases are concerned. I mean, the testing is through the roof, so clearly there's a bunch of tests, but it's still disconcerting. So they certainly want to be proactive and at least starting reeling some things in. But
we're going out to dinner, a new restaurant. Can you imagine opening up a new restaurant this year? But a new restaurant opened right down the street from us. And we're going to go out Saturday night. It'll be the first time I've eaten out inside a restaurant since March.
Really?
Yeah, because they've all been closed. You know, there were outdoor seating, you know, but I'm not a huge fan of outdoor seating. It's okay. Yeah. And especially now it's getting chilly at night. And, you know, the outdoor seating, you know, where they have those heaters, those heat things, and it still doesn't feel
it's
right.
The wind.
It's like, okay, my head is warm and my arms are warm, but now it's just blowing all over me. I don't know. I like to eat indoors. If I'm going to spend a lot of money on a dinner, you know, I just prefer the indoor eating.
I agree. We did it once for my birthday and that was the only time. And it was simply because we went to an incredibly well, a restaurant that didn't have a patio, but more so like a very, very much so socially distant. Like there was no one right. in the restaurant essentially aside from us. But that was the only thing. Like where there's been many a times where we've walked past restaurants and you know, there's, you know, more than a few people in there. And yeah, there's the, yeah, it's still a little touch and go, at least for us. I mean, you certainly can do it. And do you have to wear a mask when you go in, or is
right?
It,
no, you gotta wear masks
when you're
everywhere.
Eating. You can take it down. Right, and if right. you go to the bathroom, you put the mask back on.
Yeah,
the,
yeah. In California, you have to wear a mask any place indoors, and you can you don't have to wear a mask outdoors, but you do if you're closer than 6 feet to somebody. You have to have
fair
your mask
on. How many people do you see just walking down the street with masks on?
A lot. And I always think you don't have to do that, you know, but they still, I think a lot of people are really scared, and that if it makes them feel good, you know, good for them. But you know what's opened or movie theaters finally just a couple of weeks ago. And so they have, well, limited capacity, you know, you can only seat like certain 25% of it and they space you apart. But that's another thing that I really miss, because we used to see a movie every Friday night. That was our thing. And we haven't done that since March, but there's really no new movies now, you know, at least in theaters. So what they're doing, like in October, the theaters, we have this, the chain near us is Cinemark. I don't know if you guys have that up there or not, but we, so they're doing this Halloween series where they're showing all these old movies, which is really cool. You can get like Nightmare on Elm Street, and they're on like Halloween, they're showing The Exorcist, and they're all these for $5. You know, $5, you can go see a movie. So I want to catch some of those. I think that would be really fun. Some of those movies I've never seen in a theater. I never saw The Exorcist in a theater. I mean, it came out when I was, you know, seven or something.
And now movies just stream to a platform. So there's not that like anticipation and the excitement of going to the movie to, you know, whatever. You just kind of say, and that's all well and good. And I think this is the space for movie theaters. It's like, go with the show Pulp Fiction, or like do a Tarantino or a Martin Scorsese, you know, whatever. I'm sure those movies are cheaper to show versus like obviously first runs and whatnot.
They just are desperate to get butts in those theaters. I mean, it's really hard on the theaters, because theaters make their money off of concessions, really. They don't make their money off of the box office sales.
Can you drink in a theater?
Yes. Yeah. They, you know, it's a funny thing, because they say, well, you have to have your mask on and except when you're eating and drinking. So I think
just constantly drinking.
So basically that means nobody's gonna be wearing masks because you're in the dark, and you know, who's nobody's gonna enforce that.
Right. Yeah. Well.
So I don't know. I'd like to see a movie again. That would be fun.
But that's not happening on Saturday. Just a dinner on Saturday.
Yeah. This week. Yeah. Just dinner. And then maybe next week I'll see. I'll have to see what they're showing. You know what movie I just saw this week? I've never seen it. Is Hocus Pocus, Disney.
Oh, is
that?
It good? No.
Yeah, it's all right. It's one of those that, you know, it's kind of like one of those movies where it's very popular. It's almost receiving like cult status from people who just think it's just so funny and cute. And oh, you got to see this movie. And I'm like, all right, already. And so I saw it, and I'm like, okay, you know, it was on Disney Plus, and so we watched it, and like, okay, it was cute. it's not really for me, you know.
What is the biggest movie that you've seen that people were like, you gotta see it, and then when you watched it, you were like, what are these people talking about?
Oh man, it's kind of a lot of those movies. I remember seeing the Titanic. I was kind of like, kind of like bummed out. I was like, it was okay.
I just remember that film didn't end. I remember looking at my watch and just being like, sooner or later they're gonna wrap this up, because I know how it ends.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody knows the ending, right? But you know what series I have never gotten into, and it's almost like it's almost heresy to say this, except the very first film when it came out, I watched Star Wars. But
you and me both.
I have just cannot.
Another great Gus Johnson video. What it's like to live in a world.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
Especially for some reason as a man. I mean, maybe a very archaic kind of whatever. But like, I remember growing up as a boy, and like, I liked the first one. And I remember watching the other ones and being like, I love science fiction movies. So I really do like them for that. And I mean, they're amazing movies, clearly. But like, I think of it like Forrest Gump. Like, it's just a really good movie. It's not, you know. But you feel so ostracized from society when
it's
you
like
don't
turn in your man card if you don't want Star Wars.
Especially
but I've always been
the last three, like Ugh. The Menace. Ugh. I I didn't understand any of that.
And then the new ones, Attack of the
Clones was entertaining to watch, but again, it was just entertaining to watch and a lot of battles and things. And I don't even remember. I'm with you on that.
I thought the Rey character
was interesting, but outside of that, I really haven't been deep in that universe and really like drawn to it.
I can't. Yeah, it's just not my thing. But you know, I was always into Star Trek. I loved Star Trek. I mean, as a kid, I remember as a kid, I was trying to write a Star Trek trivia book, and I was probably 12. And the only way I could get the trivia questions was I would have to wait for the episode to come on TV, and you couldn't pause or anything there. So I was like frantically in this notebook writing down trivia questions, and I thought there's a lot of trivia questions on Star Trek just from watching it, because it came on like at 4 PM or something. So I'd get out of school and I would watch Star Trek. And then Next Generation came out, which was actually a better series in a lot of ways. But
Next Generation is the greatest television show to ever be recorded.
I can't argue because
it's so well done that they had no idea, and Red Letter Media did a fantastic, I'd never thought about this point until Red Letter Media brought it up, and they pointed out how horrible all of the Next Generation movies were. Like, they were literally just like long episodes, like, just make this a two-part episode, you don't need to make this a movie. They just had no idea how to make that into a movie, and I think that speaks to why it was so perfect as an hour-long, you know, show. I remember watching it while it was on television and being like, this is amazing. And then the first thing that I loved about YouTube is back in the day, before all of the copyright, whatever, you could find full length episodes of Star Trek. And I just watched Star Trek nonstop.
That's funny. Yeah. Oh man, I loved Next Generation so much. And yeah, probably the best show, if I had to pick what I think was the best show ever made on TV, it would be Breaking Bad. That show captivated me.
Yeah. Or Everybody Calls Saul. Everybody Calls Saul. Have you ever seen Everybody Calls Saul? It's kind of like a spinoff. It's way better.
What kind of a fan are you?
What kind of a fan?
No, Better Call Saul is probably one of those few spinoffs that's just as good. Well, maybe not quite as good, but it's pretty damn good. Man,
same kind of writing. I mean, it's, yeah, I can see why they're so good. And Ozark. Ozark is the only other one.
Oh, yeah, I love Ozark.
I mean, goodness me. Maybe our next episode, we go a little deeper on TV. It seems like we actually got a little amped when we started.
Here's one to watch. Have you seen Pin 15?
No.
Oh my God, you've got to see it. It's Hulu. Do you get Hulu?
Yes.
Okay, Pen 15, you know.
All right. I get what it's going after.
Kids used to write that. But so it's these two women who are like in their mid to late 30s, and they're playing middle schoolers. And it's a half hour comedy. It's like cringe comedy, basically. So they play as if they were like, 13 years old or something, and all of the kids in the school are actual 13-year-old kids, and so it's just so weird to see these two women playing the part of these two girls.
I have something now to watch.
Oh my God. Well, the second season just came out. I've only seen the first episode, that's all I had time for, you know, but the first season, oh wow, that was funny. It was really funny. Oh.
Always looking for good recommendations for television. It sucks when you like, we go through Ozark, like they release a new series. And we go through it in like 3.5 days.
Yeah, and then you're done.
Okay, we're done. What's next? Well, we have to wait another 8 months? No.
There's something to be said about like destination television, I think, where they release them. You know, there is kind of something about having a weekly release that gives you a TV
anticipation, tells the story in a more.
So I watch Shudder, one of my favorite streaming services. I watch it all the time, and it's just all horror movies on there. But they have Joe Bob Briggs. He used to be one of these horror hosts, and you know, it was like Elvira kind of a thing. Except he was probably bigger, where he would introduce a show, cut in during the commercial breaks, and he would talk about it and give all these. So he's on there now. Joe Bob Briggs' Last Drive-In, and he does these old movies, and he's just so engaging. I love watching him more than the movies that he's showing, really. I just love listening to him talk. But it's the kind of thing where this last season was right near the beginning of the COVID lockdown, so everybody was at home, and it was so cool to have something every Friday night at a specific time. You had to watch it then. And it was just, it was, I thought that was so cool. Just to like, I gave me something to look forward to, because I knew I had to turn it on then, because it was streaming at that moment. You couldn't rewind or anything. You had to watch it.
It used to be, I mean, I guess they still have it with shows like America's Got Talent, things like that, where it's like, you get behind it during, and it creates more of a community, like a camaraderie, because like you feel like you're doing it at the same time, especially now with social media, where people are like sharing, you're all watching the same thing, you're all discovering it for the first time, and da da da. So yeah, I agree with you. And may I also say, Shudder is a brilliant double entendre. Like, that's I thought of like Shudder. I'm like, yeah, oh, but Shudder as in movie Oh, right. My goodness, that's brilliant. Well done.
Yeah, that's my favorite channel. I obsess over Shudder. They have the greatest movies, uncut, unedited. They've got movies like Cannibal Holocaust, which to me is like one of the most vicious movies ever made. That's like for hardcore horror fans.
Just because of the goredness of it?
Yeah, this was made in 77, and you know, they shot it down in like the Amazon with like real tribes, and they were just, it crosses the line about what is, it's actually, it was kind of the first found footage film, you know, but the, the scenes that the filmmakers were actually brought up on charges. This is an Italian film. They were actually brought up on charges of that they actually murdered the people, and they had to produce the cast to show nobody was actually killed.
It's just actors. Wow.
But they played into it. You know, they had the cast sign agreements that after they were done shooting, they would kind of like disappear, not talk to the media or anything, you know. And so
brilliant.
But it's a brutal film. It's almost hard to watch, but that is an example of what they have on Shudder, which is really cool. And they have the more lighthearted, fun horror films too.
Why haven't you made a horror movie yourself yet? Or have you? And you just haven't released it?
I would like to.
Why do you not use your platform to put together a movie?
I just make my short little Halloween ones. But you know what I'd love to do is I'd love to produce a horror movie. I talked to the producer, director, writer of this low budget film, which is the most hilarious film that's come out in the last year. It's called The Velocipastor. And it's got everything. This guy, this is this pastor who falls in love with a hooker, and he gets bit or something and turns him, he gets this rage where it turns him into a velociraptor dinosaur, and then he has to go fight ninjas in China. It's got like everything in this. It's the best low budget indie thing ever. And it was huge on like, when it came out on Prime, it was like trending for like a week. It was like right there. And it was just this total fluke. And so I reached out to the guy, and I'm like, man, if you guys are doing a sequel or anything, I want to be a part of this. And so I had a conversation with him. We had a Skype call, and so maybe that'll happen sometime. I think that would be fun. I would love to just get behind a movie like that and just really see it happen.
What a fun experience. It's been my long time goal dream to write a science fiction movie. I was inspired by there's a movie called Moon. It was released, I don't even know.
I love Moon. I know that movie.
Oh, yeah. So you know Moon.
Sure.
Simply weird. Because of how you can take one set, one actor, maybe two, and literally do something which is like, I love the isolation, distant, I'm on a planet because I am mining for something, and it took me 3 years to get here, and I'm just so, I love isolation.
Yeah,
like science fiction movies, and simply because they are obviously a lot easier to make. You need, you know, kind of only a few sets, and it's much more controlled that way. So I've been pushing myself to like do it. It's a bucket list thing, actually. Just do it. Sit down and actually write something, and then figure out what it would cost to produce. I used to search around Kickstarter, because that's what a lot of people do. Like, hey, here's my idea. And they're just looking for people that want to get in the same way that you were talking. It's like, I just want to get behind something that is good and be able to contribute and help make it in whatever way. So,
yeah, that was a great movie, Moon. The whole tone of that movie was just so dark.
Wonderful. Yeah. I love simplistic movies like that.
Well, I do too. Yeah. Single location films, especially. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, there you go. And just like that, we end up talking for an hour and
got another podcast in the can.
Podcast in the can.
All right, Chad, well, it's your turn to record the intro. So after we hang up here, that'll be all on you.
Well, then
make it a good one. Make people really want to listen.
That's right. Oh my gosh, what did we just talk about? Well, we talked about a lot. This is going to be a long intro. So
as long as it's good. Add it. If you have to add explosions, add explosions.
Okay. I'll add a few explosions. And actually, if you're listening to this, you've already heard the intro. So you already know that it was probably a banger. Hopefully it was
awesome. Remember, I said that at the beginning.
You did actually. You set the whole stage. So everybody already knew. So thank you for all of your kind words about my great intro.
Hey, anybody, thank you for listening to this podcast. We really appreciate it. We're really trying to get this thing off the ground, and we're just having a blast whether anybody listens or not.
Especially making it all the way to this part, the crinkly end. So unless you just scrubbed all the way to this part, go and listen to the whole episode.
But I'm a total scrubber.
Because you listened to the whole episode, you're absolutely right. Thank you very, very much. We really appreciate it.
All right, everybody. Until next time, have a great one.
Have a good night, everyone. Good night.